WDB 860 AM Philadelphia and WPEN HD2 Burlington, Philadelphia.
Power is
going to restore 15 to 20 million jobs.
I am your future.
Isn't it about time for a change?
We're our national leaders.
AmericanWorkersRadio.com.
You're listening to American Workers Radio, a national network promoting American-made products with your host, Michael Blihash.
Well, welcome once again to another edition of American Workers Radio here on 860 AM. And as you know, our actual radio signal serves southeastern Pennsylvania, and that's also northern Delaware and the state of New Jersey. However, people from all over the USA can tune in simply by logging on to AmericanWorkersRadio.com and click on the Listen Live link. And after the show, we put up rebroadcasts, and you can find many of our rebroadcasts, and just click on the Listen Anytime link. Well, ladies and gentlemen, I hope you're interested in a very lively broadcast today. We're going to say a lot of things, do a lot of things, and we have a lot of things to share with you as well. You know, since 1999, when we first began this effort to promote Buy American Made, Support American Workers, we've gained a lot of good friends. All over the USA, many of our broadcaster friends put up our weekly commentary. Some read it directly, and some play the audio message I send out. But at least they're helping us to promote positive things here going on in America. I wish more of our elected officials in Washington and even in the state houses across America would be more attentive to what is going on. First of all, I want to say thank you to our general panel members, Mark Andel, who is the founder of the Made in America store. And by the way, you can click on his link, Made in America store, right on the front page of AmericanWorkersRadio.com, or go directly to his internet address, MadeInAmericaStore.com. Also, Larkin Conley is still on his special event. And he is a national small business advocate, a great friend of our broadcast. And we want to say best wishes to Larkin Conley for the very best. Also, Bruce Bassett Powell is with us today. He's a SCORE associate, and our engineer is Henry Chaplinsky. I'm Michael Blihash. And as always, I want to begin by just saying we're going to have a special guest today, and I'm going to mention him in just 1 minute. But thanks for helping us spread this word. And if you have any comments and suggestions, remember, I welcome them. And I do use your comments and suggestions in my commentaries and during our broadcasts. And sometimes I even bring up the questions during our broadcasts here today on Wednesday, Saturday. And we do our best to keep the people informed. You can always send me your comments and suggestions to michael@americanworkersradio.com. I appreciate hearing from you. Well, joining us today is a very well-respected guest on our broadcast. It's Professor Michael Bussler. He is a noted guest on American Workers Radio and on many other radio broadcasts. Professor Bussler is a professor of finance at Stockton University in Galloway, New Jersey, where he teaches undergraduate and graduate courses in finance and economics. And I want to tell you something, this guy is always well-respected, and we'll put the professor a few questions today, and hopefully he will be able to give us some very good answers. And I'll ask our panel members also to join in. And if you have any type of questions that you would like to have asked of the professor, remember, michael@americanworkersradio.com. Professor, good morning, and how are you?
Well, good morning, Michael. Thanks for having me. I'm doing very well. It's always my pleasure to be here, and thank you for the kind words in the beginning.
Oh, you're the best. I want to tell you something. Professor, they keep announcing in the media that there's been a major growth in America's economy, especially in the amount of money moving through America's, you know, economic system. I hear that inventory in stores is not moving much, at the pace it did 3, 4, 5 years ago. So does that mean that a lot of the money being moved in our economy is from inflation?
Yeah. So as you know, inflation has been and really continues to be a relatively serious problem. So how bad was it? Prior to the Biden administration, at the end of 2020, inflation was running at about a 1.5% rate, and it had been in the 1.5 to 2% range for the prior years. Now, what happened as a result of government policy, both monetary and fiscal policy, in 2021, we started to have a very severe inflation problem. How severe? By June of 2022, the inflation rate hit over a 9%, 9.1%, as measured by the Consumer Price Index. Even though the inflation rate has come down considerably, and data released just the other day indicates the annual inflation rate is down to 3%. Now, that doesn't mean prices are coming down. It means they're not going up quite as fast as they were in the past. And overall, since Biden took office, overall consumer price index is up nearly 20%. Now, that's putting a big hurt onto American consumers. For the last year or two, consumers had a lot of extra money to spend. Why? The federal government, through the stimulus programs in 2020 and 2021, gave out large amounts of free money to households. In fact, the average family of four received over $11,000 in free money from the government, whether they were negatively impacted economically by the virus or not. So in the beginning, consumers saved that money, but then they went on a spending spree, particularly going into the end of last year and this year. They went into a spending spree and spent all that, and that consumption, the high level of consumption, kept the economy growing. By the summer of this year, they pretty much spent it all, but they continued to spend. So how did they do that? They started putting money on their credit cards. And by July of 2022, total consumer credit card debt exceeded $1 trillion for the first time in history. Today, consumers have maxed out their credit cards. They spent all of that extra money. And even though Black Friday and Cyber Monday looked to be very good, consumers are not spending as much now because they can't as they have in the past. The small business people I talk to, I tell them, watch your inventory levels this year. Although the season started out very strong with Black Friday and Cyber Monday, I don't think the rest of the Christmas buying season will be that strong, simply because consumers have run out of money and they've maxed out their credit cards. So I'd be very careful about your inventory levels this year, again, because I don't think consumer spending will be that strong from now until the end of the Christmas season.
You know, Professor, back in the year 2000, when we were the end of November, we promoted December as National Small Business Month. And that's worked out very nicely because the Black Friday and Small Business Saturday, those are, you know, short events. But during December, we asked people to really go out of their way to promote small businesses in their community because many of them were hurting badly. And now many of the people have gotten used to spending more in their local communities. And in fact, some of the stores tell me that they are going out of their way to offer products to the people at a very well-versed price, not overpriced or anything like that, so that they'll keep coming back to the store. Because every one of these stores has been hurt very badly with electric, insurance, all the costs of everything went up. Delivery services, nothing remained the same. The thing that's disappointing to most people is that people who are supposed to be our leaders, elected to look out for the well-being of Americans at all levels, have sort of looked the other way as all this was going on. In fact, the inflation rate was started because of the gas prices going up. Once they went up, it was the end of what we knew as the past. We can't look back on the past, but we certainly can learn from the past. Yesterday is yesterday. Tomorrow has to be something positive. So I'm urging people, if they would, to go out of their way during December to promote National Small Business Month to everybody they know. In fact, on the front page of American Workers Radio, there is a nice link there. Check it out. Email a poster. Email the information to family and friends, because that's what it's all about. Now, Professor, people keep asking me to ask you, why did they have to raise the interest rates so quickly?
Okay, so this is a tough one. I can give you an answer, but again, it's going to be very difficult for consumers. So in 2021, literally in January, when the Biden administration came into office, the first thing they did was to say, we don't need all this fossil fuel. So they canceled the Keystone Pipeline. They withdrew permits to drill on federal lands. They made the permitting process more difficult. And they said to banks, don't lend in the petroleum industry. There's no future. As a result of that, energy production fell from 12.5 million barrels a day down to 11 million barrels a day of oil. That, as you pointed out, that was the beginning of the reduction in supply, which drove energy prices up and eventually led to the inflation problem. Then the Federal Reserve didn't do anything about it all during 2021 and into 2022. And as I mentioned, by June of 2022, the inflation rate had hit over 9%. So the Federal Reserve in June of 2022 said, look, price stability is supposed to be one of the goals. Price stability means keeping inflation low. It's supposed to be one of the goals of the Federal Reserve's monetary policy. Now, they ignored that goal all through 2021 and into 2022. By that time, they were so far behind that they said, look, the reason we're having most of this inflation is there's excess demand in the economy brought about by the free money the government gave to consumers, all the excess government spending, and the low interest rates near zero, which encouraged people to buy more things on credit, like cars and houses. So they said, we have to take that demand out of the economy. So they started raising interest rates, and the federal funds rate, which had been near zero, had now gotten up to 5.25%, 5.5% range. The Federal Reserve will say, we had to do that, take enough demand out of the economy to bring the inflation rate down. And they will say to you, the reason the inflation rate came down from that 9% to 3% was because we tightened up on monetary policy, reduced the rate of growth in the money supply, and raised interest rates. Your question was, why do interest rates have to be so high? And the answer is because the Federal Reserve didn't do anything in 2021 and half of 22, and now to catch up, they have to raise interest rates much higher. I'm not even sure they're done raising rates yet. Now, they're going to announce today probably they're not going to raise rates further, and most people on Wall Street believe rates should start coming down next year, and I really hope they're right. However, with the core inflation rate, that is, take out, because food prices and energy prices fluctuate wildly, economists say, well, look, hold food and energy prices constant. What's the rest of the inflation rate look like? They call that the core rate. That core rate, which has been in the 4 to 5% range for the last year and a half, is still running at 4%. Making matters worse, labor has been able to negotiate roughly 7% wage increases this year, and some of the contracts, like United Auto Workers and some of the others, they're 4-year contracts. So they're going to end up with what amounts to a 7% wage increase in each of the next 4 years. That will fuel more inflation. So I hope everybody's right that the rates are going to come down next year. It would certainly benefit business, benefit people buying houses, et cetera. But if that if those large wage increases start pushing inflation back up again, the Federal Reserve is going to have to react by raising interest rates even higher.
Professor, I have a question. Someone is asking, the Federal Reserve, who are they? Who do they get appointed by?
So the Federal Reserve was set up, I think, in 1913. That may not be the exact year, but I think so. They divided the country up into 12 banking districts. Each banking district has a president, president of the New York Fed or president of the Philadelphia Fed, et cetera. Seven of those 12 governors, along with the chairperson of the Federal Reserve and the vice chair, and a couple other people, form an open market committee. Each of those people are appointed, including the chair of the Federal Reserve and the vice chair. They're all appointed. They're supposed to be what we call a quasi-government agency, which means they're not elected and they don't have to do what Congress tells them. They operate independently. Their mission was to have three goals. One, price stability, keep inflation low. Full employment, keep the unemployment rate low, and growth. So they decide independently the best monetary policy in order to reach those goals. But they're not elected by anybody. They're appointed. The president appoints the chair, the other, and the president also appoints the president of the Federal Reserve Banks and who sits on that open market committee. So they're appointed, not elected, and they're not They're an independent agency. They're supposed to do things on their own without regard to political pressure.
Wow, Professor, that was unbelievably put, and I can't tell you how important that was stated. Now, the thing is, do you think that that Federal Reserve made the right decision to up those interest rates, knowing that we had just come off of a pandemic, knowing we had just changed administrations, and knowing that we just had an order by the president to cut back on energy production?
Yeah, so given that the Federal Reserve didn't do anything, as I mentioned, in 21 and 22, the only thing that they could have done is to raise interest rates high enough to reduce demand and to bring that inflation rate down. While nobody likes it, and I don't like it either, and I talk to some small business people who are telling me, well, I pay 1 or 2 points over prime, but prime is now 8.5%. So I'm paying 10% for money. That's going to put me out of business. So even though there's a lot of pain, I certainly understand that. The only thing the Federal Reserve can do to bring the inflation rate down is to raise the interest rates, and that's what they did.
You know, people are asking me, people with savings accounts had less interest during the low interest rate seasons, years, I should say. But America's economy was really moving strong. So people really are concerned that they got hit very badly. People that had a history of saving money every week, even if it was $10, are not able to do that anymore because interest rates went up so high that they're being clobbered everywhere they go. So when I talk to the people, even in the supermarkets, they tell me people are out looking for the sale stuff. They don't buy the stuff that they used to buy. And many of the, you know, the specialty dessert companies and all are having problems because people just can't afford those nice, tasty things that, you know, did so much good for you. So I don't know what, there seems to be a need for more people to talk to each other, like we're talking right now, to see what's going to happen for the betterment of America. It seems that outsiders are controlling everything without really informing the people of why they're and how they're doing it. Most people don't know. They said, all I know is that I don't hear anything on the news other than the fact that the interest rates went up, why it went up. They don't explain it the way you just explained it. And people are very disappointed. This is a holiday season, and people are telling me it's just not the way I would have thought it would be, not the way I would want it to be, and not the way I'm going to be able to celebrate as I celebrated in the past. So that is something, you know, I don't know how this could all be resolved, but with technology, with computerization, with all sorts of ways to communicate on social media, there's no reason that the American people should not be informed, number one, and number two, that they should not be asked for their opinions. Talking about, people tell me, you know, Michael, they're always talking about taxing the rich people more. Professor, what percentage of the people in the United States are so rich that they're being not taxed enough? What percentage do you think it is?
So the top 20% of income earners, the top 20% of income earners paid 84% of the income taxes the government received. 47% of the lower income from the households with the lowest income, 47% of the population paid no income taxes at all. I would argue the higher income people are already paying their fair share. And the president says, look, everybody should pay their fair share, except maybe his son, Hunter Biden. But everybody should pay their fair share. And he never defines what fair share is. But the problem with overtaxing the wealthy is it ends up slowing down economic growth and could even lead to more inflation. Why do I say that? Because when you raise taxes on the wealthy, look, there are three things people do with their income. The first thing you do is pay taxes. Whatever's left over, we call disposable income. You either spend it or save it. The highest income earners pay their taxes, spend their money, and because their income was so high, they have plenty of money that goes into their savings, which becomes new capital for the economy. If you raise taxes on the wealthy, they're still going to spend for their lifestyle, but they're going to have less money to go into their savings. That means less money going into capital markets and less capital available for business to expand. This is especially a problem when the federal government deficit spends $2 to $3 trillion a year and pulls capital out of the market. So it's easy to say tax the wealthy. The wealthy, in my view, are already paying their fair share, and taxing them any more is going to slow economic growth because there won't be enough capital for expansion. Could lead to more inflation because as demand goes up, if business doesn't have the capital to increase supply and expand, the only other way to react to high demand is by raising prices. So overtaxing the wealthy reduces capital formation, tends to slow economic growth, and could raise prices.
Excellent. Well said. I think our engineer has a question for you.
So, Professor, as I understand it, though, the people that have the extreme wealth in the country, they don't have income tax because they don't have an income. So they're finding ways to get rich and not pay taxes because they don't have an income tax.
Okay, I think what you're alluding to is the very wealthy don't take their income as ordinary income. If they did, they'd have to pay 37%, which is the highest income tax bracket. Instead, they end up getting their income as capital gain. And capital gain is taxed at either 20 or 23%, depending on how much. So they don't completely avoid taxes unless the tax code has some kind of loopholes, which I think they ought to get rid of too. But unless they can find some of these loopholes, they take their income as capital gain rather than ordinary income. If you remember back to 2012, when Romney was running against Obama, Warren Buffett said, I don't think it's fair that I have a lower tax rate than my secretary. He said, I made $42 million last year. I only paid a 17% rate. My secretary made $200,000. She paid over a 20% rate. Why is my rate lower than hers? And the answer was that he takes all of his income as capital gain. Back then, the top rate was 15% on capital gain. So he takes most of his income as capital gains, whereas the ordinary American people, we have to take it as ordinary income.
Well, that's
so I think what you were referring to.
Yeah, that's definitely part of the problem. And if you're wondering about loopholes, you don't have to wonder about loopholes. We all know what they're doing, the loopholes.
Horrible.
But you know, Professor, with all the social media and all, more of this should be explained in a very nice way so that people can understand it, and not so that these people at the top can't take those loopholes while the people who are working hard, keeping a schedule, maintaining their self-sufficiency are taxed very heavily. I want to turn to Mark Andel to say hello to our Professor Bussler. Now, Mark knows he enjoys being with you on the radio. And Mark, what would you like to ask our Professor Bussler today?
Yeah, first I'd like to say hello, Professor Bussler. I get up excited, but I get up more excited when Professor Bussler's on our show. you guys really talked about some really key points. I'm living it, again, with the retail stores and with my welding fabricating business. We're in the retail, commercial, and industrial, so we're very, very unique. I would like to just add quickly, Elon Musk paid $11 billion in 2021, the most ever paid by an individual. That's a lot of money, so we want more billionaires. Mike, we've talked about that. But Professor, I'm living, these times, we're on the day 20 of 31-day run. So we call the 31-day run Black Friday, day after Thanksgiving, all the way to the day before Christmas, Christmas Eve. And it's very important to us retailers. And your point on consumers, their dollars, the money they have to spend isn't going as far. So, their money is down in what they spend per visit, for sure. We're seeing it's decent up in West New York. It depends if it's last year we had a 7-foot snowstorm and then a 4-foot snowstorm during the 31-day run. But for us, we're definitely seeing disposable income down. The worker shortage I'd like to touch on is so big and significant. We've tied with all our local schools trying to get workers. They're going to make the money of doctors, welders, machinists, electricians for sure, but such a shortage. But I want to talk about the employees and the care is down, meaning that punctuality, soft skills, they just call in when they want. That work ethic, we've found some really good employees and teach them things, but the work ethic, the care to come in, they just call in if it's sunny out. And I wanted to touch on that. It's such a problem, number one, the worker shortage. You can't grow America without workers, and everybody's got this major problem. And also the care. The new employee, just they'll call in whenever they want. They just don't, seem to care. Also, they know you have a short bench. So I just want to touch on that, Doctor.
Mark, that's a great point. Look, we've had a labor shortage for a few years now for a number of reasons. The labor force participation rate, which is the percent of adults who are either working or actively seeking a job, the percent of the labor force participation rate has been declining. So people are dropping out of the labor market. That's contributing to the labor shortage. The other thing is that, especially I find with young people, they expect the government to just take care of everything for them. So they're not worried about taking out a school loan because the federal government's going to pay that back for me. They don't worry about the health insurance because I can stay on my parents' policy until I'm 20, whatever it is, 26. So a lot of these younger people just feel like someone is going to take care of them. And they really don't have to exert themselves. You know, if I get up in the morning and I just don't feel like going to work that day, I'll just call in sick. I mean, what's my employer going to do? They're not going to replace me. They can't find anybody.
Exactly.
So as a result of that, there's a terrible, terrible attitude that these young people have today. They think they're entitled expensive things. They think they don't have to work for it. They think they don't have to be responsible for their debts, and it's creating a tremendous problem. What we need to do is stop giving free stuff, tell everybody, look, once you're an adult, you have to take care of yourself, and instead of the government taking care of you. And if you don't go work for something, you're not going to get it.
Yeah, you
I'll
know
tell you, in the long run, the student, the workers will feel even better. People feel much better if they've earned something themselves, and then they could buy it rather than the government giving it to them for free. So that whole attitude has got to change.
We've got to work on it. I've got a short story of a gentleman I toured, had tour my facility, General Welding, this week, that runs works for a training center in the placement of graduates from this training center. The training center raises, you know, welders, electricians, machinists. But he had a job before teaching in Buffalo, and an 8-year science teacher told me the story through the pandemic. 2020, when the pandemic hit, he had kids he had to teach online, and 8 kids wouldn't pay attention. 2 kids would. 1 kid might stare at the screen and really be involved. Well, towards the end of the year, he was told by New York State that he has to pass every student. And he said, I don't agree with that. Half of them didn't pay attention. They all had the same, you know, they're all in the class, but they decided not to pay attention. So he fought the fight, but he ended up quitting his job and going to this training facility where he thought he could do more. But his point was, these kids were already struggling, and now you're going to give them a free year, a free pass that you passed. You're not helping nobody. And that's kind of all contributes to what we have today in our society.
It's exactly right. I'm noticing it too. You know, I'm just doing all my grading for this semester. The students are just not motivated. They just seem to, well, what do I have to do just to pass? Or I just want to get the degree. I don't care so much about what I learn. I just want to get the degree. And it's that lack of motivation, I think, that's really hurting students and American workers going forward. You know, I've said this on the show, I think, once before, and let me just, again, I'll go quickly. If you take a look at the big picture, what made America great? We went from the birth of a nation to the largest, most prosperous economy in the world in about 150 years. Other economies were hundreds, in some cases thousands, years older. How did that happen? In my view, 4 basic principles. 1, we encouraged individual freedom. As long as you didn't infringe upon anybody else's rights, you can pretty much do what you wanted. Secondly, we encouraged individual responsibility. As long as you were mentally and physically able to take care of yourself, everybody took care of themselves. Of course, you had family to work with, but the government didn't take care of you. Thirdly, we had low rates of taxation. So you knew whatever you earned, you were going to keep most of it. And fourthly, we had a limited role for government. I mean, government has to provide certain public goods like defense of the country, a legal system, leadership, et cetera. But other than that, the government stayed out of the way. So individual freedom, individual responsibility, low rates of taxation, and a limited role for government, I believe, made this country, allowed us to grow and become great. The current administration is doing everything exactly opposite to that. They want to limit individual freedoms. They want to control the healthcare market, the education market, et cetera. They want to tell you what cars you should buy, what appliances you should buy. So they want to limit individual freedom. Secondly, they want to replace individual responsibility with government responsibility. Don't worry, the government will take care of this, the government will take care of that. Thirdly, in order to pay for everything, they're going to have to raise taxes, and they've raised them wherever they can during this administration. Even during the Obama administration, the Obamacare Health Care Act had, I think, 21 new taxes in it. And fourthly, they want a large role for government rather than a smaller role. Those 4 principles that they're doing exactly opposite to what made America great, in my view, are leading to some of these terrible attitudes that workers have today.
Yeah, no, good answer. And again, I was very happy with Donald Trump. I was busy. Military work was here. Now it's gone. It's been put on pause for 3 years. My oil mining work is gone. 5 million's lost in sales. I'm trying to get back. We were secure. People can't say it. Donald Trump nailed it. And unfortunately, he doesn't get that credit. And it's just true. I just wish I had them days back.
Yeah, you look at the economy under President Trump. Inflation was record lows, or at least near very low. The unemployment rate had gotten down to 3.5%. The poverty rate had gotten down to 10%. That's the lowest we've had it in decades. And economic growth wasn't quite what we expected. But in 2020, January and February, it looked like the economy was going to take off and we were going to have great growth, probably exceeding 4% for 2020 until the pandemic hit. So those economic conditions were very good for the economy as a whole, and for small to medium-sized business people, it was perfect. And now everything has changed.
Yeah, you know, Professor, we go through the pandemic, we go through, you know, the sewage, well, you remember the deep freeze of Texas, the sewage canal blockage, whatever that was, and then the administration change, and we got the Ukraine war, we got Israel. You know, there's so much that's went on, and people don't talk about the expenses for me in business, how they're doubled. My electric bill and gas bills went from 30% to 50% increase in the last 2-3 years. So you got your your utilities and expenses increased, your sales decrease, and if your sales increase, your profit margin decrease in them sales. So you got a recipe for disaster. Very, very tough times out of my 38 years that I've ever seen.
Yes.
Yeah, and I think Mark had mentioned last time we spoke that the cost of money to you is now over 10%. And that's
yes, my line of credit's over 10, yep.
Yeah, over 10%. I imagine your labor costs are also going up, as everybody else's are. And if you can't pass it along anymore in sales and your sales are starting to flatten and all those costs are going up, your profit margins have to be squeezed tremendously. And there's only so far you can squeeze with those.
And you nailed that. You got to control your inventory. We call it perfect ordering. Don't order too much. Can't be out of anything. But perfect ordering. You can't have just in case. You got to control your inventory because a lot of times your profit's in your inventory. You've got to use that to pay your bills. So, you know, the average welder right now is $60,000 a year. And if you don't, you're not keeping them. And if they ever leave, yeah, if you're laying them off, they're not coming back because they're so wanted. You're not getting your employee back.
Yes, sir. I agree with that, Mark, 1,000%. Absolutely. Professor,
yes, so.
I want to ask you something. If
Surely.
Government spends less of our tax dollars, will that help bring down inflation once and for all here in the United States?
Help bring down inflation significantly. If we could get the government to come even close to balancing their budget. Now, the Biden administration is projecting a $2.2 trillion deficit for fiscal year 2024, which began October 1st. That's on top of the deficits that the nearly $2 trillion they ran the last 2 years and the $3 trillion they ran the year before that and the $3 trillion that the prior administration had in their last year. All of that leads to excess demand in the economy. And when you have excess demand in the economy, that pulls prices up. So the first thing I would do is try to get as close as you can to balancing the budget. I know that's going to be very difficult, but that's the first thing they need to do. The second thing I would do is reverse energy policy, because higher energy prices not just affect what we pay for the gas in the car and to heat our houses, but it affects what manufacturers pay for their energy to produce the products. It affects the transportation industry because all the truck drivers now, the trucks are paying more for energy too. So lower energy prices will help to bring the inflation rate down and stimulate the economy. So get the government close to balancing the budget, get the energy prices back down, should be, and that would be a large first two steps to bringing that inflation rate down.
You know, Professor, someone just let me know that in America, what used to be 11% in poverty, living in poverty, is now listed on the government's timeline clock, the U.S. debt clock, as 42 million people living in low-income situations, many in poverty. That's disappointing. That's really disappointing,
yes.
Because that means that the people in Washington are not paying attention to anything, that poverty would rise so much in a period of time. It makes no sense. Our population, first of all, people are saying, well, we need more workers, so we're bringing people over the southern border and all. I'm sorry, we don't have that kind of economy. Like, we had an economy like that maybe 50 years ago or before that, when we pulled in all the people from the world to help our industries. Today, America doesn't have that kind of economy because a lot of our industries have moved out of the United States. And nobody in Washington's talking really to bring them back. You have to listen to broadcasts like ours to hear that sort of stuff. But the thing is, we don't have that kind of economy anymore where people are saying, wow, we need workers and we are because we're expanding our industries. No, everybody's sitting quiet because inflation is killing them right now. There's no way that we could bring in another 7 or 8 million people, they're saying, in the next year coming from the southern border. That is why the Republicans, which I agree with this point, are saying we have to do something to end the border crisis here in the United States of America. And sending money around the world is understandable for important and very urgent needs. But we have an urgent need right here in America. But we're seeing our mayors and governors in various states saying that we can't take in any more of these migrants. And when a migrant comes in, by the way, even if we had 10 million people come in the last 2.5 years to America, even if we had to put $1 a day for them, that's $10 million a day. It costs a lot more money to bring in these migrants. People tell me that they go into various cities. They are approached by people who do not have anything to do with the English language, but they're on the streets asking for help. This is not what America is about. When the immigrants came to this country, they were invited. They came and they had a letter. You're going to go work here. You're needed there. And they brought over a wife and children with the person going to be in the job. Everybody had that security that you mentioned. They were able to be self-sufficient. That's not the point. Today, everything is we just want to keep things moving and moving and bring this one in and bring that one in because they said we have an aging population, a low birth rate, so we're going to need the immigrants here, the migrants. So, but there's no real formula. Where are the migrants going? If they're going to other states, the mayors and the governors are saying, Mr. Biden, where is the money to support them? Do you hear that, Professor?
I do. And so, look, we need some expansion in our labor force. The best way is to get all the people that, for whatever reason, aren't working anymore to come back and work. We still may need more. So we have a legal immigration system. Every year, legally, the U.S. Admits over a million people annually. That's more than every other country in the world combined.
Right.
So we allow, and if we need more people, you know, we're shortage in certain areas, then anybody who wants to come in with that skill, we can let in legally. You know, years ago, I had a friend, he was in the real estate development, and he couldn't find enough architects. So there was an architect he knew in Argentina. He wanted to immigrate in here. They legally brought him in. My friend's company sponsored him. He became an American citizen, contributing to the economy. And that's the way our immigration system is supposed to work, not just open up the border and let anybody walk through who wants to. And we have the slightest idea, really, who's coming through there. Now, they try to get some numbers, and you see it's not South Americans coming through there entirely. There's people, was it 26,000 people from China have come through this year? Mm-hmm. They're coming from Iran, even, and Syria, and
Russia.
Russia, even, and these people, who knows why they want to come here. They're certainly not coming. They're supposed to be, if you come at the border and you want to get in, you're supposed to seek asylum from where you're coming from. But these people don't do that. They just say, I want to come in. I have a relative who lives in this city. The government will take me to this city for free, and then I'll try to figure out what I can do. So we have a bad illegal immigration problem. We need to fix the immigration problem so only the people we'd like to come into the country can come in. The Democrats say, well, look, it's humanitarian. These people are starving, and so we ought to let them all in. Well, we can't take care of the entire world. We're having enough trouble taking care of all the Americans. So block the border. Lock down the border so it becomes secure. Anybody who wants to come in, let's fix the immigration system so we let in the people who we want to let in. You know, not only do we have an immigration problem, but you take a look at the world today. When President Trump left office, there was no wars anywhere. Nobody was attacking anybody. As soon as Biden came into office, he retreated from Afghanistan, left $85 billion worth of equipment in a pogrom air base. That was a sign of weakness. Then Russia invaded the Ukraine. North Korea started shooting missiles again. Trump had stopped that. Iran, which because of the sanctions of the Trump administration was on the verge of collapse, the Biden administration allowed them to sell oil again and release some of the funds that were frozen. What did they do with the money? They started to give it to Hamas and Hezbollah and the Houthis, and now all of these people are attacking. And even China, who Trump was confronting, even China now is starting to flex their muscles around their country, Taiwan and Philippines. So the world is not safe today. Even the Middle East, they had just signed a bunch of Abraham Accords that were between Israel and some of the Arab nations. It looked like peace was coming there. All of a sudden, everything stopped, and now we have a world where you have a war in the Middle East. Russia has invaded Ukraine. North Korea is shooting off missiles, and China is about ready to attack Taiwan. This current administration, in my view, not just economically, but on national defense, has been a terrible disaster. And even go down to locally, the crime in virtually every major city, the crime has gone up significantly. I went to college in Philadelphia. You know, there's a couple areas where we're a little – I wasn't afraid to walk around the streets at night. Today, that's different. So I think this Biden administration has been a failure, not just economically, but on national defense and safety for the American people.
You know, Professor, you are 1,000% correct. You know, we've allowed ourselves to degrade ourselves by not, our families have, you know, just not been speaking up within their families. Our leaders have not been speaking up. Our teachers haven't been speaking up. We're doing this to ourselves. The fact that people come out of school without being able to keep a schedule and not know how to present themselves is a big concern. Schooling in America costs us a tremendous amount of money, and yet no one is really governing. We have to graduate you with this particular skill because this is a skill we need, and not present the just, oh, get the diploma and, you know, fly the coop. It is just not normal to do that. And you know what? There are many Russians that are escaping Russia because they don't want to go into the service. They're finding their way to foreign countries to come up through the southern border and come to America to seek freedom. I think it's time for the Democrats and the Republicans to sit down and say, we have to protect America. We have to protect our borders. Every person in this country must be self-sufficient. They must be self-sufficient. They must be coming here at the invitation of a business that's looking to expand in America, that's going to, you know, go wild in America, a brand new product. We invented so many things over the years in this great United States. And now most of the inventions, when I speak to people, they say, oh, that's already been invented. They're making all these new additions of this and that. All foreign made, all foreign invented. What happened to America? I don't understand. Professor, I want you to say hello to another gentleman on our broadcast, Bruce Bassett Powell. Bruce, welcome our Professor Bussler.
Yes, good morning to you, Michael, and to you, Professor. Glad to have you on. I agree with much of what you're saying. When I came to this country, I arrived with my green card in hand. I had to go through at least a year of bureaucratic work to in fact get my green card. I had to prove that I had the skills that the company that I was coming to work for needed, and I fortunately did. I had I was a qualified paper maker, and I came in and worked for the paper company in the U.S. I felt that at least I'd gone through the right process to get here, and I'm glad to be here. But you know, I hear Mark, and I was glad he did well during the Trump era. I think I disagree with everything going forward. You know, that's just me. I wouldn't vote for him, but there you go. I think he did more damage to the U.S. externally than anybody else ever has.
Well, Bruce, the big question today is, what are we going to do to end inflation? How are we going? They say what goes up must come down. Well, I hope that's going to be the what the professor said early in the broadcast. I hope that's going to be happening. But in order to do that, it's going to take everybody working together. And that means I think it's time, really time, for the news media to start speaking up about how are we going to question our people in Washington and our local governors and senators and House of Representative members as to what they're going to do for their individual areas that they represent, where their taxpayers live. We, the taxpayers, have to speak up a little more. Whatever a president, an individual president does, that's one thing. But we in our states and in our cities have to also speak up. President Trump or President Biden or Obama or Reagan and all, they were presidents. They were leaders. We appreciate what they did. However, we all have to be worried about our own back door. Our own back door is always first. That's something that I'm not seeing. Professor, do you see it otherwise?
I see it the same way. Remember the theme of President Trump's campaign in 2016 and likely going forward here is we have to put America first.
Right.
We recognize that we have responsibilities to other people, but they all should be secondary to America first. We have a homeless problem in the U.S. We should be spending money on helping American citizens who will become homeless, especially the ones who fought in wars for us and fought to defend the country. So we need to put Americans first rather than putting all these other foreigners ahead. And every time President Trump says, put America first, make America great again, the media comes down on him like he's some kind of a radical. He's going to be a dictator if we elect him again. And you're right, Michael. The media has got to become more objective in their analysis of happenings and political policies, monetary and fiscal policies and other policies. They have to be more objective rather than just thinking Trump is bad and anybody else is better than Trump. And every time Trump puts forth a policy, the media says something's wrong. Look, to be completely candid, the way President Trump presents things often is a problem. A lot of times he says things, and to be quite honest, it makes my stomach turn. So I'm always a little nervous when he's saying things. But if you ignore that and look at what the policies are, his policies were exactly right for America. I remember right when Biden got into office and he started doing all these things, I started to write, look, this is going to lead to a very severe inflation problem. It's not transitory or temporary, as he says. This is a severe inflation problem. And the people I talked to said, look, the last few four years under Trump, everything was so good. How can we have an inflation problem? They don't even understand what an inflation problem is. And the media went along with it and said, don't worry if prices are going up a little bit. It's only a temporary thing. As soon as we reopen the economy and as soon as we get supply chains working, all the inflation will go away. And that was absolutely wrong. The inflation problem wasn't caused by supply chain disruptions, although there were some of that contributed. But the economy by July of 2021 was producing at the same level as before the shutdown in March of 2020. So in the aggregate, in the total, we didn't have a supply issue. The inflation was caused all by excess demand, and inflation, except maybe during a war, inflation is never a temporary event. If you don't treat it, it's going to last.
It's going to last. Professor, we have to have you back real soon. I think we discussed a lot of things, and I think it's time, more than time. I think for the new year, we're going to have to say we want elected people, business people. We want all of the people who are trying to do good things like yourself and our broadcast here to unite for the good of America, for the good of America. You know, we have to look out for mandated priorities in government like health, education, human services, Social Security. But we also have to look out for the future of America and make sure that our young people know where they're going to go and what they're going to do. Somebody told me that they didn't understand what I was talking about. I said, well, when you have a flat tire, you will. Well, someone had a flat tire and they said, wow, when I was out there on the highway and all those cars were speeding by, I understood what you mean. We have got to get together and stick together as Americans like never before. We're making a lot of progress with our Buy American Made campaign and all those kinds of things. But sticking together is going to have to be a big, big priority in 2024. No matter who's the next president of the United States, we still have to depend on our governors and our local people to represent our most important needs. Thank you, Professor Bussler. Thank you, Bruce Bassett Powell. Thank you, Mark Andel. Thank you, Henry Chaplinsky. And we will have a rebroadcast of today's show up on the internet in a few hours. Until we meet again, I wish you and yours the very best until this Saturday at 11 or next Wednesday at 11. Have a great one, and thanks for tuning in. God bless.
Ciao. I am Melissa Canop.